Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
This is Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Carrie Miller. Now, our topic for the rest of the hour is the wisdom of heavily subsidized megadeals as states compete to land big corporations. Think about the bidding war unleashed by Amazon.com in its pursuit of a second headquarters city. How about the deal for the future factory near Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, for flat panel displays by Foxconn, the Taiwanese electronics company? Now, Foxconn is best known for making Apple iPhones in China. The plant is slated to open in 2019 in Wisconsin. Now, here's the thing. Wisconsin got the Foxconn plant by offering massive tax breaks. If everything goes to plan, the tax breaks could end up costing the state some $4.8 billion. Now, it's the latest deal, it's the largest deal, to a foreign firm in the U.S. So, are these mega deals smart economic development strategies? Or are they a waste of taxpayer money? Are there times when a mega deal makes sense and others when they don't? And why are the number of mega deals on the increase since 2008? Well, I'm joined by two experts. Art Rolnick is Senior Fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Welcome, Art.
Good morning, Chris.
Timothy Bartik is Senior Economist at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, I want to reach out to our listeners. What do you think of the Foxconn subsidy? How about the tax dollars that are going to be thrown at Amazon.com? Can deals like these lead to more investments, more jobs, you know, a cluster of activity? Tell us what you think. Call us at 651-227-6000, toll free at 800-242-2828. So, Tim, just to start off with you, there's an organization called Good Jobs First, and they calculate that the subsidies valued at $50 million or more are becoming increasingly common. You know, there were typically fewer than a dozen mega deals annually through 2007, but since 2008, that rate has more than doubled to an average of about 25. So what's going on with these big deals?
Well, you know, the incentive race has, you know, I have a database on incentives that roughly incentives have tripled since 1990. Now, in the last few years, we've actually seen some states cut back on incentives. For example, Michigan and New York, which were heavy incentive users, cut back. And the thing that worries me about Foxconn is it could be an escalation of the deal, because the Foxconn deal, compared to the average incentive in the U.S., is roughly 10 times the dollar amount per job. So the typical incentive deal in the U.S. is roughly equivalent in its subsidy effect on cost, to about 3% of a business's wages. That's the typical deal that states have been offering. The Foxconn deal is about 30% of wages. I mean, and, you know, currently the incentives in the U.S. are about $45 billion a year is what state and local governments are doing, which is roughly equivalent to what states receive in corporate income tax revenues. So that's a considerable amount of money, but, you know, it's moderate, in, you know, compared to the size of the economy or many other things. If that escalates to 10 times as much, in other words, if Foxconn leads to other deals, if Amazon headquarters 2 leads to other deals, and that's a real threat to a lot of state and local public services. To it just threatens to unbalance the whole state and local fiscal system. There's a real threat of that. I mean, in Wisconsin, they're currently debating whether or not to offer a similar deal to retain jobs at Kimberly-Clark. So where does it stop?
Right, because the management at Kimberly-Clark's not stupid. They're going to go, hey, you're paying these people to come here. What are you going to pay me to stay?
Well, yeah, and J.P. Morgan Chase has said the same thing about Amazon headquarters, too. The head of Jamie Dimon, the head of that, said, hey, if you're offering this deal to Amazon headquarters, too, I think people should give us the same deal.
Right. So, Art, these deals are justified. These big deals are justified because you're going to jumpstart a lot of investment. That is not just you're going to be creating a factory, an enormous factory, you know, acres and acres of factories. But then that's going to lead to other businesses coming in. So maybe not exactly a Silicon Valley, but that's kind of the image that people are suggesting to think about when they are tossing these huge subsidies at a company.
Sure. From a local perspective, it's easy to make that case. Prima facie, you want jobs, you want growing companies, more tax revenue, helps to build your infrastructure, your schools, your roads, your bridges, and then the better your infrastructure, that feeds back on the economy. And so it's clear from a local point of view, from a parochial point of view, it makes sense to consider the game, but you got to be careful of buyer's remorse. I think Foxconn's a good example of it. Looks like they won't even get back the amount of tax subsidies till the year 2043. So
the state of Wisconsin won't get back. The state of Wisconsin won't get back, right?
Question. Who knows if they're going to even be around in 2043? So there's a big risk. And in fact, if you look at the history of a lot of these deals, I'll mention one in Pennsylvania in the 70s. Volkswagen spent a significant amount of subsidies for that. 10 years they closed. So you don't know. The risk is pretty high. Nevertheless, from a political point of view, jobs today, very concrete. You see the firm going up, the plant going up, and in some cases it does work. I'll give an argument for Mercedes that went to Alabama back in the mid '60s. They paid a lot per job, something like $200,000 per job. But go 20, 25 years later, it looks like that one worked out. So I understand from a local perspective why this is so enticing. I understand politically why it's enticing. Generally speaking, though, be careful. Buyer's remorse is there. And just more generally, from a national perspective, no new jobs. From a national perspective, just moving jobs around. And as Tim pointed out, from a national perspective, over $40 billion a year that could go for public goods, for infrastructure, schools and roads, et cetera, is simply corporate welfare. So local point of view, maybe. National point of view, makes no sense.
Well, I would go even further than Art. I actually think that the state of Wisconsin's estimates that this will break even in 2042 is an optimistic estimate. Because that estimate essentially assumes that Foxconn will only generate tax revenue,
right,
and will have no effect at all on public service cost. Yet we know from numerous studies that when job growth goes up by a certain percent, population growth in a state tends to go up by 80% as much. So those, you know, assuming that Foxconn creates jobs or Amazon Headquarters 2 creates jobs, people come in, they expect to have their kids educated, the roads get congested, you need to expand them, infrastructure costs money, you need to pay for all this. And so I actually don't think Foxconn will ever break even. I think from a local perspective, this will never fiscally pay off for Wisconsin ever.
So, and following up on that, so one of the reasons why people justify these jobs is these investments, is subsidies, is jobs. But how are the workers going to come? I mean, are these going to be good paying jobs? Because the way I'm reading it, it doesn't seem that Foxconn agreed to be paying generous wages and nice benefits.
Well, what I read was on average $53,000 a year, which is not great jobs. But more of a concern is there's a real job shortage nationwide and in Wisconsin. Wisconsin unemployment rate is below 3%. It looks like they're going to have to go out and go to other states and try to encourage people to move to Wisconsin in order to fill those jobs. So it's not like the people there, if there was high unemployment, it would make more political sense. But there isn't high unemployment there. It's very low unemployment. So even on that metric, they're not going to do well.
Well, in fact, there are studies showing that when you create jobs in a low unemployment area, it even creates more of a population growth effect. In other words, one of the key issues is to what extent will these jobs raise the local employment to population ratio?
Right.
And if you already have low unemployment, that's hard to do, and it tends to all be reflected in population growth. So the payoff in terms of increasing local earnings per capita is much less when you have low unemployment. And so, you know, I think when there are deals of this magnitude, you know, to answer your question, can they pay off? Well, yes, in principle they can pay off, but only if the multiplier effects are very, very large. I mean, in the case of Foxconn and Amazon, the estimated multipliers are about 2.5. That is, for every one job in those in Foxconn or Amazon, there are going to be 1.5 other jobs in suppliers or local retailers and that kind of thing. In order for these deals to pay off, you'd have to have multipliers more like 6 or 7, which are kind of hard to find.
That's hard to find. Well, let's go to the phones. And Ron is in you're in Wisconsin, right?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. One of your guests kind of mentioned briefly about priorities, and I'm a township supervisor in a rural township in Wisconsin, and we've been trying to fix our roads to support our agriculture, mainly agriculture industry, and we are continually told that we cannot afford to raise our revenue for transportation needs. And all at once, we can now spend $3 billion on a technology that changes so rapidly that it could come and go very quickly. So, I guess my comment is it is a matter of priorities, and I think we're really not prioritizing our scarce tax dollars.
Well, Art,
thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you for your call. Thanks for making that point, Art. This is an important point that when we're thinking about these subsidies and when you're sort of looking at them and you're thinking about job growth, I mean, they can make sense on their own, but it is a priority. Are you going to put the money in education? Are you going to put the money into infrastructure? I mean, there are choices that are being made here.
Well, here's the argument the politicians will make. They'll say, this is new revenue, new tax revenue that we wouldn't have gotten anyways from Foxconn, and this will allow us to build the roads, et cetera. The problem with that argument, especially with this particular deal, is they're not going to get that tax rate. Even as Tim points out, they'll be lucky to get this revenue back by the year 2043. So I absolutely agree with your caller in a way, in a general way. What are our priorities here? If you take a national perspective, we're not creating any new jobs. It's a question of where Foxconn's going to locate in our economy. And we're taking billions of dollars and not investing them in our roads, our bridges, our education. It's interesting. If you look at the state of Minnesota, fortunately, back in the 50s, we invested an awful lot of money in education, in public goods education. We were an average economy in the 50s. Today, because of the high quality of our workforce, because we invested so much in education, we're one of the best economies in the country, in fact, in the world. So, indeed, priorities matter a lot here. And simply giving corporations money to do what they probably would have done anyways, from a national perspective, makes no mistakes, and it really skews our priorities. So here you have a good example, this caller raised, where you need these monies for roads and bridges, critical for long-term economic development, and instead you're getting it to a corporation that may never deliver.
Right, and I would add, though, in addition to spending on things like preschool, K-12 education, job training, roads, infrastructure, you could also devote some of these funds to customized business services to small and medium-sized businesses, manufacturing extension services or customized job training, business incubators. And there are some studies indicating that the cost per job of some of these business services is far less than the cost of subsidizing business relocation decisions by large corporations. So it's not as if you're faced with the alternative of either we do deals like Foxconn or Amazon or we do nothing about our local economy. There are alternatives to these mega deals.
And I'd also point out, consistent with what you're saying, the investments you're talking about are low risk. We know they deliver for the economy. We know education. We know strong infrastructure. We know low crime. We know all that contributes to the wealth of the community, the health of the community, and the economy.
So now, do you have a question for Art or Tim about these subsidies to attract business into a state or a region? Do you have an experience like the township supervisor from Wisconsin? Give us a call, 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828. And now let's go to Sean. And Sean, you're in Minneapolis?
Yes, I am.
And what's your comment?
Well, I worked in the staffing industry, actually in the Minneapolis and Wisconsin area, and I'm completely against these big deals for a lot of reasons, but I think one of the things that we're missing is that they're saying the average salary will be $52,000. I would say the majority of these individuals that are being paid will be paid, less than $20, maybe $15, $12 an hour. And my concern is mostly they don't have the workers there. We literally ban people into these manufacturing plants in Wisconsin for these low wages. So the quality of life of the worker is terrible. They're treated horrible. And then most of these individuals will put a burden on the socials on the social system because they'll qualify for assistance. So really, what is the reaping of the benefits is for the corporation and maybe for the local governments. They get a few new roles, but you're right. The disparity among the counties and the cities is great because they land these deals. But the worker becomes more of a burden for that community in the long run because they can't afford housing. They can't afford, you know, basic things of life if they're paying at the rate that I know for a fact that Amazon's doing. And a lot of these organizations that come in on these tax are these tips. And yeah. I think that's the big crime. We're not really talking about the workers. We say these average salaries, which is it's false. It's a false figure.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling it. Tim, this average salary and then taking a look more closely at actually who's earning this salary.
Well, I think that's a key factor. I mean, to me, some of the key issues with whether these deals pay off is what are the wages pay relative to the prevailing wage in the area for workers of similar skills? So Art mentioned the Mercedes deal in Alabama, and there the wages were clearly much higher than prevailing wages. So it had the effect of bringing up the wage scale in the community. And so we need to always ask the question, is this bringing up the wage scale in the community or is it lowering the wage scale? The other issue is, Who is the firm going to hire? To what extent will this actually lead to a higher employment to population ratio? You know, Amazon headquarters too, for example, you could hold the whole issue. To what extent is Amazon simply going to import all the workers from somewhere else and not really hire locally much at all? I mean, now Foxconn may hire more locally, but in the end, that may also still lead to in-migration. So I think we need to look at whether or not is there actually a pool of unemployed workers who, as a result of this in the local community, will get jobs. And if that is the case, these deals can pay off a little bit better. But in a lot of cases, states don't ask enough questions about either what's the wage rate compared to similar skills locally or who's going to get the jobs.
You know, dating myself a little bit here, but when I was breaking into journalism, looking into stories about Atlantic City, and the promise there, Atlantic City was a city with incredibly high unemployment rates. And that's what the casinos were justified by. They're going to hire a lot of people and people are going to have good jobs, well-paying jobs. But what the casinos did, and it wasn't that the casinos were bad, but they need highly skilled labor. So the really good jobs actually came from Las Vegas and other places around the country. And so the city actually never got much of the benefit of these higher skill, higher wage jobs that justified a lot of the, well, let's let the casinos into Atlantic City.
So I agree. You should always ask that question. See, manufacturing has changed a lot. I think manufacturing traditionally has, in many cases, provided high-paying jobs for people with lower educational credentials. But that's less of the case anymore. I mean, more of the jobs in manufacturing are more skilled, have higher skill requirements. So there isn't quite the wage premium in manufacturing that there used to be. And also, as was mentioned, we have to look at the local economic context. Does Racine, how low is the unemployment rate in Racine? How many of the jobs will actually go to Wisconsin residents? It's also near a state border, which is a whole other issue. I mean, to what extent will this simply lead to people commuting into the jobs from Illinois?
Art, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, so you got to ask the question. Economically, I think we would agree this is a very questionable practice. But politically, there's big payoffs. Because it looks like, if you're not in the weeds, it looks like you're creating jobs. You can see the factory go up. You see the excitement about it. President of the United States comes to Wisconsin to praise all this. And so politically, it looks like a good thing. And in fact, it's actually somewhat, questionable on a political grounds because it sets up a relationship between the politicians who are making this subsidy and the business. What do you think happens in the next political cycle as who supports that politician? So there's a conflict of interest here that I think from a political point of view, as citizens, we should be concerned about. The question is, given the political incentives to do this, even if it's high risk and most don't pay off, how do you prevent these bidding wars? The Amazon's taking it to the extreme. extreme. I would argue it's got to be at the national level, that what's going on now among states is an interference with interstate commerce. It violates the Commerce Clause. You're only going to end this at the national level if there's some leadership at the national level that's willing to take this issue on to say, look, this makes no sense. Our priorities are messed up. This doesn't create new jobs. This simply moves them around. It's basically corporate welfare. The difficult question is, can you take this to the national level and end it? And, I've been involved in this issue, so has Tim, for 20-some years or more. And to get some national movement on this is very difficult.
Tim?
Well, what I would add to this is that one of the really problematic aspects of the Foxconn deal and of many of the Amazon Headquarters 2 proposals is that a lot of the incentives they're proposing are way down the road. So the Foxconn deal goes on for 15 years. So part of what Wisconsin legislature and governor are doing is they essentially are passing on the cost to the next governor and the next legislature. I mean, so
I'm going to argue, even if it's a good deal, like
right,
in Mercedes,
right,
which actually worked out, Mercedes is going to locate somewhere in the South. They got four or five different states bidding in the South, so a bunch of public money, a bunch of taxpayers' money went to a private corporation to do what they were going to do somewhere in the South. They were going to create those jobs. From a national perspective, they would have existed. So even when it's a good deal, even when it works out parochially, it makes no sense from a national perspective. It skews our priorities instead of the infrastructure, the public goods, the education.
All right.
Where it's corporate welfare. If you follow the dollars, the beneficiaries of this are the corporations. Now,
all right. Art, we haven't raised,
and this just came up in Seattle.
Art?
Yep.
I want to interrupt here because I do want to get to a call here.
Oh, sure.
Let's go to Jody, who is in Downing, Wisconsin. Is that correct, Downing?
Yep, that's right. So, I live an hour from the Minnesota border, and I've watched our state crumble in the last years while Minnesota, there's lots of us that have actually thought about moving to Minnesota. There's so many issues here and so many people that were against this deal and could see it for what it was, and yet we had no voice. I really love the idea of this going to a national level because something's going on behind the scenes that our governor, would go for this when he got in with a Proposition 10 and took overnight. The teachers that I knew lost $500 a month pay overnight. So any teacher that could get out of here got out of here. But another big issue I wanted to bring up is the water. They're taking the water from Lake Michigan. How did that happen?
Yeah, no, that was a big, that was one of those surprises that sort of came out later on. I don't think it was sort of like emphasized, and then it just kind of happened. Absolutely. And that has big implications because of the Water Compact and the Great Lakes. And I do want to now go, because we're in Wisconsin, let's go to Somerset, Wisconsin. And Bill is in Somerset, right? Bill?
That's correct. Yep, that's where I'm at.
What's your observation?
Well, we live right next to Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota, so we're quite familiar with how much better it is over there. But it's going to cost St. Croix County probably, I hear, $43 million to support this business that is not going to do a thing for us. And then even more importantly—
And how far away are you? How far away are you from Racine?
Oh, around 250 miles.
And it's going to have a spillover effect of that amount?
Yep, $43 million. And what's even more frustrating, there's a company in a city near us, Engineered Propulsion Systems, a new aircraft engine, but they need $50 million to finish their design and access a $500 million market. They've got radical technology that will change that world. And with $50 million, we could have that kind of a business up here in this part of Wisconsin. But that money is going to some foreign corporation and not to a local startup that has shown over the last few years to really be able to do what it says.
Yeah. So, this is so, Tim, I want to ask you, you've been involved in this, you said, what, 20 years, at least 20 years?
Maybe 30 years, actually.
30 years. Okay, so 30 years. And a lot of times when I sort of hear this conversation, it's a little bit like St. Augustine, I don't want to sin, but just not yet, because everybody says this is a bad thing and we shouldn't really be doing this, but nobody can resist.
Well, I actually am not quite so pessimistic as that. As I said, you know, from looking at incentives, the incentives tripled from 1990 to 2015, but most of that occurred from 1990 to 2002 or so. From 2002 on, this competition had roughly stabilized. There may have been some more of these mega deals, but other deals were cut back. And overall, you know, what was happening was some of the high incentive states like New York, Michigan were cutting back. Some other states like Wisconsin were bringing up incentives, and there was roughly stability. What I'm concerned about with the current thing is it may escalate things again. So I do think that, you know, transparency, that demanding transparency at the local level, saying why on earth are you giving out property tax abatements or some incentive that lasts 15 years when we know that business investors are making investment decisions are mainly concerned with cash flow over the next few years. I mean, the notion that someone worried about the Wall Street stock price of their company next year is worried about some incentive you provide in year 11 is kind of ridiculous. So I do think that there's a lot that can be done, not just at the national level, but at the state and local level to constrain these incentives. And in fact, that was working for a period of time. My hope is that people view Foxconn and Amazon more as a warning for looking at alternative policies rather than as something that states will try to imitate.
Let's go to Julia, who's also from Wisconsin.
Hi, I actually live in Minnesota now, but I've got a lot of family and friends in Wisconsin, and they have been complaining about how the location of this Foxconn project is going to be right next to Chicago. So it's mostly Illinoisans who will benefit from the jobs that it creates.
Yeah, this has been brought up, and Art, I think it was you, it might have been Tim, but you know, you brought up this that, you know, just because you're creating jobs in one area doesn't mean the people in that area are going to benefit from this job growth.
Right.
It's important, I think, to take a national perspective on this thing. These jobs are going to be created somewhere. I think the sin here is using public money to subsidize corporations to do things they would have done anyway. This is money, Tim pointed out, something like $40 billion plus dollars nationally are going for corporate welfare that should be going to infrastructure for roads, bridges, education, et cetera. The other thing we don't point out is something that years ago the New York Times called the double dippers. So this is happening right now in Seattle. The Seattle Mariners, who got $500 million for a new stadium a number of years ago, their lease is up, and now their new lease, they say, fine, but we're not going to stay around unless you give us another $200 million. So Foxconn, you could see Foxconn 5 years from now saying, well, yeah, you guys did us some favors, but we need more. And if we don't get more, we're out of here. And you've already, now you're politically in a tough position. So this is a form of economic blackmail. It's going to keep coming back. I'm not as optimistic as, in fact, I'm fairly pessimistic about this, much more than Tim. I think unless the national government steps in, you and I are going to be talking about this issue for years to come. There's always going to be an incentive for politicians to look like they're creating jobs locally. This is an interference. It violates the Commerce Clause. Nationally, we can stop this. That's where it's got to end. If they don't step in, it will not end. We will have programs like this continuing for years to come.
Well, speaking of buyer's remorse, let's go to Bob in St. Paul, because I believe you have an observation about buyer's remorse.
Yeah. There's a great book that came out a few years ago, Strangers in Their Own Land, by Arlie E. Ehrschild. It's about what happened in Louisiana when Bobby Jindal allowed all of these petrochemical companies to flood in there.
You know, Bob, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're having some issues with the line. But my producers, they've written out what your question or your observation was going to be. So I'm just going to read it. So you say, what about buyer's remorse? In Louisiana, they did the same thing by allowing the petrochemical industry into the area. And it brought a few jobs, but that didn't go to locals, but destroyed the environment and took money from teachers and infrastructure. It's a bad deal. So I'm glad you added that example. Tim, the petrochemical industry, Louisiana, you know, that was a lot of incentives to attract that industry.
Well, yeah, Louisiana is a very high incentive state. And in fact, traditionally, they've had these incredibly generous property tax abatements that the state handed away without allowing local governments any say in them, which is kind of weird. That's now been modified, so local governments get some veto power over it. But you know, I think that in many cases there is buyer's remorse, and in fact, I think we need to focus on that to try to lobby on this locally. And I agree with Art that the federal government could help with this. I mean, it's interesting that a lot of what goes on in incentives in the U.S. would be illegal under the European Union. That if France or Germany tried to offer incentives of the magnitude of Foxconn, it would be deemed an illegal export subsidy that would be against European Union rules, and any other country or any other competitor, for that matter, could raise an objection and could require that the company receiving the incentive repay it. And we don't really have, you know, you could have those kind of rules in the U.S., or you could have, there are a wide variety of things you could do to regulate this at the national level. I'm not optimistic about the federal government doing this. So, I mean, maybe Art and I are optimistic or pessimistic about different things.
Well, I was going to ask you about the federal government. I'll toss this to you, Art, and then back to you, Tim. But, you know, we are living in a time where with President Trump, I mean, this is about, you know, getting deals here in the U.S. And if you got to use subsidies, I mean, look at the subsidies that were with Carrier in Indiana. So this seems to be the era of subsidies.
Well, they've been around for a long time. You can go back to Hamilton and look at subsidies.
We don't want to go back that far.
I mean, they've been around for a long time. I agree with you, though. I think it's heating up, and Trump is heating it up. But let me mention something about the rules or the laws we have in this country. We have something known as the Commerce Clause that says cities and states aren't supposed to be interfering with interstate commerce. One of these subsidy deals that went on between Michigan and Ohio was actually ruled by the Fifth District Court as being unconstitutional, as violating the Commerce Clause. It's interfering with interstate commerce. We actually have rules. The problem is the courts, it got to the Supreme Court, and it ruled that Ralph Nader didn't have standing, so it never got heard on its merits. The problem is Congress hasn't acted. It isn't like there isn't a law on that. There's a constitutional part of our Constitution that says this. The founders knew that this is counterproductive from a national economy to allow interference. So we have laws to prevent this. We're just not enforcing them. I know what Tim is saying, to ask Congress to actually act. They haven't acted for 30 years on this, and they've known about this. I'm not that optimistic about that either, but that is the solution. If you don't do that, Tim and I are going to continue talking about this for years.
All right. Well, Tim, I'm going to give you 20 seconds for the last word.
Well, the last word is that these things are expensive, they have a heavy opportunity cost, and they're all alternative policies that work better. We could invest in people, we could invest in helping smaller businesses, we can invest in infrastructure, and that's a more effective way of helping state and local economies than handing out these large Foxconn-style deals.
Well, thank you very much. I thank both of you for taking your time. Art Rolnick, Timothy Bartik.